Welcome to Shrink Wrap, a podcast where Fran and Becky give proper respect to various mental health and wellness topics
while adding in a little bit of smart assery that they just can't seem to contain.
This podcast cannot and does not constitute therapy advice.
However, we do hope that you find the information we share with you helpful and entertaining.
Please be advised that this podcast discusses topics that can be sensitive to some listeners. Use appropriate discretion.
Hey, everybody, welcome.
Welcome.
It's recording day.
And we have a guest today, which we're super excited about.
One of our favorite guests.
Yes.
Yeah. She also sleeps with our producer.
Yes, I know.
Regularly.
In the same bed.
You have to check out that episode.
So what are we talking about today?
I'm excited as a 51-year-old woman with no reproductive organs. Okay. We are going to be talking about the effects of hormone shifts, not only in old women such as ourselves, but
I'm
also...
I'm glad you included yourself
I
in
did.
That.
I did. Only because I don't have my reproductive organs, but also in younger women, say ages 25 to 45. So we're going to be talking all things hormones today with Dr. Brian Mueller.
Welcome.
Thanks, guys.
We're happy to have you.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Frantastic Factoid.
So really, this should be Frantastic Factoids because there's multiple. So I'm going to break them down. Okay. So hormonal sensitivity seems to drive self-injurious behaviors and thoughts in women. According to BMC Psychiatry, in a study of 600 individuals ages 13 through 62 who were diagnosed with PMDD, premenstrual dysphoric disorder, 72% of them reported lifetime active suicidal ideation, 49% reported planning suicide, and 34%. This is high. Attempted suicide.
That's huge.
That sounded like German.
Yeah, that's huge.
That's huge.
If you go to Chirica, you can get the Kuchen.
Oh. You know what I made the other day?
What?
Krautbrach.
What the?
No.
Good Lord.
Do you know what that is?
No.
Well, I don't know what you just...
No, I mean...
I don't think there's enough explicit like checkboxes for me to put on the platform.
It's like a therapeutic way. It's called krautbread, apparently German. And you you make this homemade, we don't make homemade dough. You buy the dough and then you roll the dough, which is a lot of freaking work.
You should make the homemade dough.
Well, whatever, you know.
If you really cared about your loved ones. But anyway, go
on. I don't. So, and then you just put sauerkraut and bacon inside or sauerkraut and sausage. Because my son's girlfriend taught me how to make krautbrach. And now I can say it forever. Okay.
Maybe she thought if I teach Fran to make something with sauerkraut, it doesn't matter if it doesn't turn out because sauerkraut is sauerkraut.
See, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, good job,
all
Carly.
All going to taste like shit.
Yeah.
No, it was delicious. If you like sauerkraut, do you like sauerkraut?
No.
Well, then fuck you. Anyway.
Okay.
Moving on.
Anyway,
okay,
next
factoid. In addition to increased suicidal behavior, those with extreme hormonal sensitivity are at risk for different types of accidents and injuries. Like what? Like you walk into a door or you get in a car accident.
Bitches be cray.
Women are going to burn your house.
Thanks for joining us on decreasing the stigma.
Now I get it.
Oh my God. We both, Becky and I both made eye contact and we're just like, oh no, are so canceled. Okay. Payne and colleagues found that psychiatric symptoms are often exacerbated during premenstrual and menstrual phases. And I totally remember during that, during my 30s, I knew I was off. The charts, and I couldn't, I was like, I don't even know what to do about this. Okay. Last factoid, researchers suggest, and this is, I've been taking this to heart. Mental health people should account for this by using the menstrual cycle as the fifth vital sign.
Agreed.
Right. So when you do your intake with new clients, how many times are you asking them about questions related to hormones or menstruation or, menopause, premenopause,
and if they
all
don't
of
know,
that.
That's why that thought and behavior charting can be so good. Take a month and just record how you feel every day.
Yeah.
And then look for patterns.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's huge. So let's talk for a second about our delightful guest. I just so enjoy having her here every time she's here. Dr. Brian Mueller is a medical doctor specializing in obstetrics and gynecology. She went to medical school at the University of South Dakota. Go Yotes.
Go Yotes.
did her OBGYN specialty training in St. Louis and has been practicing in Aberdeen for over 10 years. She is a board certified OBGYN and a fellow in the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology.
We are not worthy.
Recently, oh, this is so exciting. She became a national certified menopause practitioner through the American Menopause Society, the most well-respected and largest group of menopause experts in the world.
Congratulations. That is awesome.
It is. She's the first and only NCMP in the state. We're so lucky.
We are.
In addition to specializing in the diagnosis and treatment of hormone abnormalities in women, she is also a member of the International Society for the Study of Sexual Women's Health and currently in the process of getting her fellowship in women's sexual health. You can learn more about Dr. Mueller from her website, BrianMuellerOBGYN.com. So that's BrianMuellerOBGYN.com. Or you can follow her on Instagram and TikTok.
You are
the talk.
Yes, this is awesome. You are such a...
We aren't worthy, actually.
No, really. At all. Talk about schlepping it
well,
today.
Well, so I'm going to give you just a second to give your platform or to say what you've been working on, because this has been couple months in progress here.
And it's some groundbreaking shit.
Yes, yeah. It is. Mm-hmm.
So talk about what you've been up to.
Like as far as the...
Deer.
Toot that horn, lady.
Do
Our
it.
Listeners need to
Hype
know.
Yourself.
Yes.
I think I just got to a point where... I mean, there's been a lot of research about menopause education and residency. And because of the WHI coming out in 2002, that's a huge women's health research study that came out that basically slammed hormones in all capacity. I believe that attendings or teachers of people who are going to be doctors weren't prescribing as much hormone replacement therapy, either because they were scared of it or, more importantly, because patients were scared of it. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, I didn't get like the best, awesomest training in mm-hmm. menopause stuff. It was kind of like take stuff or don't. Here's your one option. Otherwise, get a cooling blanket or a fan. That was the, right. the advice. And so I don't know. I was like, there has to be something better. And so in my research, I was like, okay, so what is it? What's the best thing? Who can educate me? Who knows the most about this? Mm-hmm. And this one organization, it's affiliated. I mean, it is the top of the top as far as organizations go. The lead researchers who are writing the papers, who are telling us, you know, this is the latest research in the last 20 years / advising doctors on how to treat women, what's safe, what works, how are things being regulated, how are women being treated. Let's advocate for women's research because they're worthy of researching. I was like, yeah, those are my people. Mm-hmm. I'll get in on that.
So when was that initial study done? Because I can remember mm-hmm. back in the day when it was like, oh, it's bad. You're going to mm-hmm. get cancer.
Totally.
When was that study done? Well,
but back then they were talking about hysteria and stuff too, right?
Yeah. So. Oh,
he's showing you something. I know. He's going way
so
back.
So
yeah,
mean.
I know. So mean.
Okay, so the WHI is the Women's Health Initiative study, okay? And so before that, like basically in the 40s, I think, or 50s, gosh, that wasn't on the test I took. Yeah. Anyway, so back in the day, someone isolated hormones. They isolated estrogen and progesterone, but mainly estrogen from pregnant horse urine.
Ah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so that was kind of like penicillin.
Oh, dear Lord.
So penicillin, utrane. Penicillin came from mold, right? Well, yep. Estrogen came from horse pee. So anyway, what they figured out is if they isolated it in a lab, so it wasn't like you're eating pee, and gave it to women, they didn't have hot flashes. They felt younger. They had more energy. And so they just touted it as be young forever, take this medicine. But in the 60s, no one was studying anything, much less women. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, we didn't have all this great research. So they decided to do some research on women. Yay. Awesome. I'm so thankful. Mm-hmm. However, The study was poorly designed. They threw hormones at women in basically all age groups after 50. They kind of excluded hardly anybody. They didn't standardize the comorbid conditions, the decades people were after menopause, etc. And they stopped the study early in 2002, basically saying this is increasing women's risk of breast cancer and heart attacks and strokes. And so that's what hit the Today Show. That was what it was all mm-hmm. over TV. That was what everything, if you're taking hormones, you will die. And so therefore, everyone stopped. But I mean, we'll talk about this later, but it kind of left a window for salespeople, honestly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Hey, do you guys remember when we did the episode on menopause? Brody will remember this because it's Brody.
It's burned what in my
was,
memory.
What was one of the things recommended back that a woman was supposed to drink to help?
Oh, ew.
Yeah, what was it?
Was it horse pee? I was
no!
Gonna- I was going to ask if you got that horse pee direct from the farm. Like, living on the farm, did you just get
Becky
it?
Becky remembers.
Get it right
and
there,
you but... don't, and she's older than you. So,
okay.
What was it?
Semen.
Yeah, but it was testicular juice.
Yes.
I know.
That's so gross. That was a dude.
Seriously was all about the best interest of women.
Of course.
Obviously, right?
You know, I want to see the methods on that study, honestly.
Right?
I want to see the methods on there.
It was all conducted at the Playboy Mansion, would be my guess.
60% of the time, it works every time.
Yeah. It's so gross. Yeah. But I think this is also important because as you're talking, I think back to my colleague back in the day, and she has since passed away from cancer, pancreatic cancer. But in the 70s, her sister had breast cancer. And she said she vividly would remember her sister's doctor coming in the room and couldn't look her in the face when talking about her breasts because it was her breasts. And it's like, that was the 70s, which I know for some of you is going to seem like eons ago. It really wasn't that long ago.
No, it really wasn't.
And so if we couldn't talk about breasts, we sure as hell couldn't talk about when you stop menstruating or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Ew.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think women are worthy of research. They are worthy of providers and doctors who know the research and who are able to offer them accurate, available health insurance covered, regulated medicine that'll fix them.
And it sounds like, I mean, I'm not trying to dumb down what the whole study, but I think if there's one takeaway from that study you talked about, we can't do one size fits all. Mm-hmm. What works for a 50-year-old is not going to work for a 92-year-old necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. And to expand on that, first of all, they did retool the study, pull out certain age groups and figure out, okay, if you're within 10 years of menopause, you're cool. You're probably good to go if you don't have these other three comorbid things. But if you're 92, probably not. So that was one thing, is they retooled the study and figured out actually useful data for us.
Good.
Not just women, you don't get anything. You just have to tough it out. Like a whole generation of women just toughed it out. Good for them. But there wasn't a need to do that. The second thing is in the last 20 years, it's 2023. That was 20 years ago.
Right.
Other research has clarified this. Mm-hmm. You know, like people have said, okay, women are miserable and they deserve more. We deserve more. We deserve to sleep at night. And to that end, I think that it's important to flip the script. I mean, think about if this happened to men, right?
Oy.
Think about if at age 50, a man couldn't sleep at night because he was up all night having hot flashes or just couldn't sleep. If he had pain with intercourse, his penis started shriveling up and getting dry, and some doctors called it atrophic, and or his mood changed, or. Do you think that this would have taken 100 years to research?
Not at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know
what? First off, that would never happen.
Oh.
Okay.
Like, you are superior beings.
Right.
Sorry.
Right.
Our mistake, Brody.
It's science, Becky.
But, you know, here's what's so depressing, because I used to read Ms. Magazine, and I do still read Ms. Magazine, but back in the day when...
Wait, what is Ms. Magazine?
I don't know. I don't read magazines. I gotta be honest.
It's like Cosmo.
It's all about feminist literature. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is so.
I believe that about you.
Yes. Oh my God. Like Gloria Steinem was like one of the big.
I thought you were gonna say Gloria Estefan.
I was going to at first, and I was like, because I did hear a song from her the other day.
I feel the rhythm of the Congo.
And I always wondered why she became so famous, because I didn't think she was that good. But anyway, so Ms. Magazine, anyway, and that was the comparison was when women were getting. When you starve yourself.
Anorexia.
And they were saying the brightest men in America, the most high achieving men in America were dying at this rate, starving themselves, what would society do? And you know what we've learned? We've learned society does nothing when it comes to women. Same thing when we are breastfeeding and then we stop breastfeeding, they tell us to stick cabbage in our bras. Mm-hmm. When is that going to stop?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But men get a vasectomy and they get all kinds of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why is that?
It's not fair. And now, I think society in general has a higher tolerance for women's suffering in general. I mean, figure it out, ladies. You know, whereas if men came with the same issue, they'd be like, oh my God, here's Viagra, please. You know, fix it all.
In the vegetable wars, they still tell us to put peas down our shorts
with
a vasectomy. So, I mean.
Yeah, but you get drugs with the peas.
Yeah,
yes,
but you get drugs with other things, too.
No, the women do not get, they would not prescribe me anything for pain. It was cabbage. It was the middle of summer. I'm still bitter.
I got peas and ibuprofen. Fair. So, I mean, it's not that much
better. No, you didn't get any other tougher thing than ibuprofen?
Not anymore, they don't.
Oh, they don't? Mm-hmm. Oh, well then.
No, because of the whole opioid addiction thing, right?
Yeah, oh, doctors are very... But it wasn't opioids.
I mean, I was already addicted to opioids at that point. Well, so,
what I'm saying is doctors are much more cautious about prescribing pain medications.
Yes. But I, no, in all seriousness, I didn't need it. I mean, ibuprofen was...
Yes, because you're a manly man.
But we did just watch the movie Bridesmaids, where she got that tattoo and they said put some peas on it, and she went in and she opened up the bag of peas and then dumped individual frozen peas on her back.
Oh my god.
I just love that movie.
Back to the factoid.
Yes.
So, hormonal topics impacting mental and physical health of women. Let's start out with puberty. What do we know about
where it all begins?
Yes. Totally. And I think that's when people associate mood changes with hormones, right? Mm-hmm. That's what you think about as your 12-year-old girl. I mean, we have an 11-year-old. She probably won't listen to this, but sometimes she just cries for no reason. And I'm like, sweetheart, what's wrong? I don't even know. I remember that.
Yeah.
And it's because all of the hormones are coming online. Before, you had nothing. They were both in a steady state, but also overall low. And then now everything's coming online. Your brain is starting to make hormones that's communicating with your ovaries, that's communicating with your uterus. And that system takes time to come up, but it's definitely a huge change. Mm-hmm. But the thing I love most about puberty is that we're required to take classes on it.
Yeah, right.
I love it so much. Yes. So I say required because nobody volunteered for that. Mm-hmm. But also, like, everybody can kind of describe the steps of puberty. You know what I mean? Everybody can kind of say this happens and then this happens and then this happens. And they kind of know what's a reliable source and what's not. And it's not a big mystery. And we're not freaking out. We're not trying to buy a bunch of products in general anyway. Mm-hmm. And we can kind of get each other through that. And that's what I think mass education over a health issue would and does do for us.
But you know what? Why? Because boys and girls go through puberty, right?
Oh, that's a good point.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point. So anyway, puberty is just kind of the beginning of human function, like, or of ovarian human reproductive cycle, you know, and it's a lot more to it than just the ovaries. There's a ton going on. And usually, you know, if all the parts are working together, it creates a cycle, which is, like I said, it doesn't happen immediately, but that's kind of the goal. So if people come to me, like I'm a OBGYN, like I said, with hormone complaints, usually what they're talking about is something is wrong with their cycle. Or like exactly like Fran's factoid, they are being brought in. I'm talking about women of reproductive years now, being brought in by their husbands, their family, saying she's losing her ever-loving, I don't know what, bag of peas every time she has her period. Like, can we fix this? And maybe sometimes she ends up in a psychiatrist's office. Maybe sometimes she ends up in primary care. But, you know, these people are miserable. And I can't say why some people are more miserable than others.
Yeah.
You know, why is she suffering whereas she isn't? Mm-hmm. And I can only tell you when it is. So most women, when they're having problems with their periods, it's during the luteal phase of their cycle. So if you think of the first, if a typical period cycle is 28 days, if everything is typical, then mid-cycle is day 14. That's when you ovulate. When women ovulate, not you, sorry.
Excluding Brody.
And then from that, so day 14 to when you have your next period, that's the luteal phase. And that's when progesterone is high. And sometimes for whatever reason, and we don't even know the reason. Like I refreshed myself again today. I'm like, is there anything new? No, there's nothing new. We don't know why. So why does some people, are they exquisitely sensitive to that hormone change? And some people aren't. What I can say is if you are one of those people that are exquisitely sensitive to that luteal phase, you end up having more problems throughout your life, including in menopause, which is interesting.
I would say I had horrible PMS, horrible PMS, lots of mood changes, lots of anger. Oh my gosh. I may or may not have one time punched a closet door. Oopsie doopsie. Kids aren't around, didn't see it. So that was nice. But then it's Jim's like, what are we going to tell them? And I'm like, don't ask me right now or I'll punch your face.
Put your head through it, make it bigger. That's an easy one.
It sucked though, because you'd be like, I felt like I was like the exorcist a little bit, where my head would spin around and green stuff would come out. And I'd almost be not literally levitating above my body, but it's like, who is that?
Yeah.
Because it was such a departure, but it was every week.
Totally.
Or not every week, every month.
Yeah.
And most women, like I'd say 90% of women have had at least one PMS syndrome or symptom. I'm talking about that luteal phase symptoms where you're having breast tenderness, headache, back pain,
acne.
Sometimes acne, sometimes weight, like weight, like bloating. Some people actually gain weight, anxiety, irritability, fatigue, restlessness, crying, like all of that, including like pain sometimes. So I think most women have experienced one of those, where it ventures into like DSM, are we a five? DSM-5 mm-hmm. criteria would be PMDD, which is only 3% of women, or PMS. PMS is more common than PMDD, and it all boils down to severity. Mm-hmm. So how much is it affecting your life? Are you going to go to jail because you literally like are robbing banks? Are you going to like be admitted because you are actively trying to kill yourself? That's PMDD.
Yep. Yeah.
Whereas if you're like, I can't go to work and I'm losing, I'm just broke up with my fifth boyfriend. You know, I'm trying to think of other severe things that might be more PMS, less PMDD. Anyway.
Yeah.
And you know, this is an important thing for clinicians as well, because if you're doing couples therapy and there are times when a woman is getting very aggressive and really like, I'll hear from the man, it's like, I don't even know who she is sometimes, like all of a sudden she'll be swearing and yelling and getting super angry and like super short with the kids. And it's like, as the clinician, you need to be able to be aware of this so you can assess how often is this happening?
Totally.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it really does. This information is critical to know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and think about like, I lost my train of thought. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm just going to speak for the guys out there. Like that is something even on the, Just keep track of it yourself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If your lady, if she's not herself at certain points and you're like, what the fuck did I do? What's going on here?
Right.
Like, just keep track of it a little bit. Do it for like 2 or 3 months or track it for a decent amount of time. And then, not when she's in that mode.
Right,
but
because you don't want to be like setting yourself up.
I don't want to die.
Just don't do it.
Just, hey, maybe this is what I've noticed.
Right.
And I think it's helpful for everyone if an outside source says, I notice this when this, right?
And so. And then I think you could say, you know, could we go talk to your doctor about it?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Becky, why is the Northern State University graduate program in counseling so awesome?
I could go on forever, but let's talk about the fact that you can get a clinical degree where you can work in private practice or an agency, or you can get a school counseling degree on the school track where you can work in a school as private school, parochial school, public school, any school you want to. And then my favorite.
What?
Forensic counseling.
Super cool. Yes. But is it KCREB approved?
It is KCREB approved. And you're like, what does that mean? You know what? It means that it has the gold standard of grad schools.
Super awesome. But can I afford it? Because I don't have a lot of money.
It's okay. If you go to northern.edu, you can apply for some scholarships. They have a couple of counseling specific scholarships in addition to some other really fantastic scholarships that a guidance counselor or a admissions counselor can help you with.
Awesome. Be Northern, unleash your potential, baby.
Oh.
And I think for women that actually have this, because I remember the times when I did lose my shit, it is such a shame. Like, you know that's not you, and you feel horrible. You feel remorse. You feel like, okay, what the hell just happened? And it shouldn't be such a shame. You know, we don't want to be like that. No woman wants to be like that.
And we didn't do anything to cause it.
Right.
We did not. Now, I also read somewhere that, you know how you always crave, like, sweets right before your period? Mm-hmm. I read somewhere that there's actually a physiological reason for that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, that same high progesterone, think of progestation. So progesterone. So it's the high hormone in pregnancy.
Oh.
So progesterone is what is dominant in that cycle. So think of all of the symptoms of pregnancy, that's all with it. But I can't remember the neurobiochemical reason for that, but basically it's stimulating receptors that's making you think like feel that way.
Yeah, so whatever I read said, you know, you can reach for a candy bar, that's okay, but here are some other things that you may also want to reach for that your body will appreciate a little more.
Well, doesn't it stimulate like either dopamine or something like that in your brain?
Well, yeah, sugar will.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I think that might be
probably part of it too. Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is progesterone is it's involved in your serotonin processing and reuptake and all that. And so that's, I think, why SSRIs are indicated for treatment, but also why I think it affects your mood so crazily.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons, obviously, it doesn't cut as dry as all that. I'm simplifying crazily, but also, you know, that's part of the biochemical process there.
So what is the ideal treatment of choice? Like if a woman is really suffering from premenstrual dysphoric disorder,
medicine for sure. And she gets to pick what she wants to do. It's sometimes people are like, I'm on board with birth control. That's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And some people like, I want to avoid birth control. And either way, it's fine. You either do an SSRI or like an antidepressant, mm-hmm. and you can either do that during that luteal phase or you can do it the whole time. I find that it's really hard to take people off of an antidepressant every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a roller coaster in and of itself.
That'd be hard to keep track of.
It really would.
But also when I stop taking, I don't know. I guess I can say I'm on an SSRI. When mm-hmm. I stop taking it, then I feel withdrawal-y. Like I don't mm-hmm. feel quite right. And so I don't want to do that either. And so I usually offer people an SSRI first, if that's what they want. Or if they want birth control pills that are pills, patches, rings, anything that will decrease your overall cycling and mm-hmm. decrease the overall transition. I think it's the slope of that curve that gets people. Meaning it really drops off. Your estrogen really drops off. And think of estrogen as everything in our body that's good. Mm-hmm. It makes us feel amazing. And when that falls off abruptly and then progesterone takes its place, like you just kind of feel crappy. And so what can we do to make that transition easier, but also make those hormone levels overall lower?
Mm-hmm. So how does an IUD work in those situations? Better, mm-hmm. worse, indifferent?
Anything that will think of a menstrual cycle like a sine wave, like a mm-hmm. wave. Yep. Mm-hmm. And so some people's waves are like, wah, pretty high and pretty low, and they're just kind of sharp and crazy. Any sort of contraceptive pill or hormonal treatment, pills, patches, rings, IUDs, injections, all okay. of it will bring down the amplitude of that curve. So some of them will okay. make it flat completely, so people don't have periods at all. Some people, they'll have a little bit of an increase and a little bit of a decrease, but it's just not as drastic. Okay. An IUD over time will kind of flatten that curve out.
Oh, okay.
So if you have premenstrual symptoms, if we take about route away that cycle or take away those menses, you don't have the problem anymore. And that goes for people with pain where they're or people with bleeding where they're trying to bleed to death. If I turn off or down that volume, usually people do well.
So that was something that I never heard about growing up, that you could have an IUD. I mean, I'd heard of it, but it's not something that you really knew people that did. And it seems to me now more and more young people are doing it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's something that's changed in the last 10 years, especially, but 20 years specifically. So it used to be, actually, this is a tangent, but IUDs got a terrible rap in the 70s because they had a braided cord on them. So like a tampon, they had a braided cord. So therefore, if you got an STD like gonorrhea or chlamydia, the bugs could crawl up, bacteria,
the cooties,
virus. Yeah, they could crawl up that cord, infect your uterus and fallopian tubes and cause infertility. They've since done away with it. The cord on an IUD now is like fishing wire. It's a monofilament cord, so nothing can get up there. But the stigma remains. I meet a lot of moms of teenagers who would do great with an IUD, but they're like, absolutely not. It causes
infertility. It used to be like braided cotton?
Kind of, yeah, like a tampon. Yeah. I mean, back in the day, because women, I don't know, we didn't have resources or whatever. Think about, Brady, did you know back in that time period, women who had periods, they were literally wearing a belt with like a cloth.
Yes, like a garter. Yes, I remember my mom had
the belt. That got discontinued shortly before. It must have been like maybe 10 years before I got mine or maybe a little bit more than that. But it was still in some of the literature. And I remember being like, I hadn't got my period yet and reading books in the library that had that. I was scared to death to get my period.
Archaic. It really did. Yeah.
But it still was a step up from before for them. For them, it's like, this is so slick. I don't have to have like washcloths. I don't know. Like, women have been doing crazy things for a long time.
I mean, that's nostalgia for Fran, but I.
Oh my God. She used to have to take the wheat and then weave the wheat.
Papyrus. Papyrus cloths.
Mortar and pestle making.
I legit did not know that.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I was going to sit back here with my privilege.
Encanto and like generational trauma, like that all boils down for medical information too. Like I bet if you really sat and thought about hormones, right? If you just think the word hormones, what comes in your mind? And I bet 9 times out of 10, if you're above a certain age, you have a negative connotation to that.
Yeah.
And it's all because of all the bad press that came out about that study. Now, when we retooled the study or came up with more research, nobody on the Today Show did an interview about that.
Right. Of course.
They didn't give a shit about that.
Mm-hmm. Hormones are something we all have.
Totally.
Every single
one
of us.
Women. Yeah. And it regulates so much. So anyway, for PMS and PMDD, that's kind of your options.
I want to say one more thing about that with PMS. Number one, I think a lot of times couples therapy is beneficial in addition to medication because it can greatly impact your marriage or your relationship. The other thing is so many of my clients anyway are not good about taking their medicine consistently.
Totally.
Right? And so it's like if you have clients like that and then you're saying go on it 2 weeks and then take it off, you might as well just throw it down the toilet. So we really examining like what is your medication compliance is super important, I think.
Mm-hmm, totally. Well, and I think giving the people the tools to talk. I mean, I guess a lot of my job isn't I don't know. A lot of my job is medicine, but a lot of my job is education and just talking and giving them the phrases to phrase that. So if I had a husband in the room, I guess I would say, I don't know. I mean, try to teach it, come at that really delicately and kind and with kindness. Sweetheart, I know it seems to you that everyone is trying to piss you off. I feel like you feel like everyone is out to get you and nothing is going right. And I feel like that absolutely is true in your head. However, I've also noticed that that's kind of weird during these certain times. Have you noticed that? I mean, like come at it a little slanted and leaving a lot of outs and kindness. I don't know. So...
anything with kindness is going to be good.
It's touchy, and that's why sometimes having a therapist involved, you're not going to kill the therapist as much as you would like to kill
and
your
husband.
The worst thing
key.
You could say is, dang, are you on your going to get your period?
Yeah. That's always a great one.
And then
one.
Brody will come in with, bitches be crazy.
No. Be cray.
Be cray.
He lives with three women. He's going to have to see how that goes for him.
I've started to say when she gets into a place where everything is horrible and you all
if
are
that were to
off,
ever happen, yeah,
ever happen.
Hypothetically,
in the one time in 15 years that that's happened, I say, oh, well, we had a meeting. Like, didn't you? We had a meeting. I was the one tasked with pissing you off this week. So we all got together. Like your nurse, your friends, we all got together, the whole city. And I was the one to piss you off. So everything's going to plan. It's fine.
It's all good.
And then other hormone issues people come to me for, like in reproductive years, would be like acne. So I meet a lot of women who are either referred to me from dermatology or vice versa with acne that's really bad. And I think that we tend to blow that, or we have blown that off in the past, but I think it can be extremely distressing for a teenager. Like it's their face, it's how they feel about themselves, etc. So that can easily also be fixed by just like I said, turning down the amplitude on some of those hormone changes. And then if it's severe, then dermatology has special things they do.
And you know what I'm seeing is a lot of women after they have their children are getting deep cystic acne. I did. I had it as well. At that time, they were like, they told me do spironolactone, which at that time there wasn't a lot of research done about it. And I was nervous about it. I didn't take it. Or Accutane, which, you know, is like a million and one, I don't know, warnings. Finally took the Accutane. It was the best thing I ever did because it was so painful and embarrassing. And it was after I had kids.
So I feel like a lot, I meet those type of people usually after they're done having their kids and they have a tubal or a vasectomy. And then they have all these hormone issues and they're like, oh man, I got that tubal and now I'm dying. And it's like, no, what really happened, I bet, I can't generalize, but I bet what happened is you were on birth control pills, patches, rings, et cetera, until you got your tubal or vasectomy and now you're off everything and now you're seeing what it really is. I don't think that that's the case for everybody, but I meet a lot of people like that. So acne, spironolactone is interesting. It's a diuretic, but it also has anti-androgen properties to it. So for people who have like, the classic is PCOS or polycystic ovarian syndrome. Basically, they have too many androgens that are for a female in her premenopausal reproductive range, basically. And so what can happen is they get male type characteristics. So hair on their face, acne on their face, balding on their head, dark hair growth on their chest, their stomach, acne on their stomach and their chest and their back. And then it goes along with that is irregular cycles.
And it is prescribed, isn't it, for transgender individuals, female to male trans individuals.
That would make sense. You know, I don't, that's not my specialty, but I would totally see that because of the anti-androgen properties of it. I could see that. And then pregnancy, like when people get pregnant, honestly, a lot of their hormone problems, it seems counterintuitive, but a lot of their problems aside from the first trimester seem to go away a little bit because your hormones are pretty steady through the second and third trimester. The first trimester, it's like shooting a rocket into the stratosphere as far as your estrogen goes and your progesterone. And I tell people, you know, like they're like, oh, I accidentally took my pill, my birth control pill, and I didn't know I was pregnant. It's like, honestly, it's like peeing in the ocean, peeing in the ocean for all that pill did because your hormone levels are so high in pregnancy. So in the first trimester, people can get headaches, they can feel really crappy, but usually it evens out.
You know what's so fascinating about that is when I worked at a psychiatric clinic here in town, very often we would have patients in common, the psychiatrist and I, and if they were being treated for bipolar disorder and would get pregnant, you usually have to go off pretty much everything for the safety of the baby. And I remember when the doctor saying, he goes, pregnancy is a miracle because what you'll see is their symptoms really aren't as severe. as they would be if they were not pregnant and off their medication. And it was pretty true for the most part. You would still see some ups and downs, but not to the severity that I know I was holding my breath about, and probably the woman was too.
Totally. And I mean, two things to that. I think since then we've come up with a lot more research and a lot more partner decision making of like, what is it? Can you tolerate? Because I do keep people on a lot of psych meds unless they have clear fetal effects. And I think it used to be like 40 years ago, they just said, come off everything, right? Come off everything. Who cares if you're suffering to come off it? And I think now that more research is coming out, we're able to say, you know what? It's important for you to be happy and healthy and functioning in addition to growing a human. As long as we're not hurting the human, let's make sure and still help you too.
And I think that's where the collaboration is so important. I think it's good in that scenario. If you're a doctor and you're unsure, collaborate with a psychiatric doctor and vice versa, you know, because you each have your area of specialty. So
and I'll
work
take
together.
That hit. I'll take that hit every day, all day long. I mean, how many, if I had a nickel for every woman I saw who she comes in, she's suffering, she's dying. She's like, I'm moody. I'm crying. I can't function. I can't go to work. Well, why? Well, I found out I was pregnant 2 weeks ago and they told me to stop everything. Well, I bet that was miserable. I bet you stopped 3 psych meds and you felt like awful. Let's actually go through and number one, figure out what you can actually continue and not, or what can we substitute so that you're not falling apart.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and same with thing with breastfeeding. So breastfeeding, actually a lot of people don't know that breastfeeding is a postmenopausal state in that your estrogen is way suppressed. So honestly, I see a lot of people who are breastfeeding who have vaginal dryness, pain with intercourse because of that, hot flashes, night sweats. And it's because the prolactin that's being produced to make you make your milk is making your estrogen not bottom out, but be lower than it should or what you're used to. And so a lot of people have symptoms like that, which is interesting.
When I think of the power of hormones, you just made me think of this. There's that after you have a baby, there's that one night, and it's usually within the first week or two, where you wake up and you are soaked, soaked from sweat. I'm not talking you maybe did a hard workout. I am talking every article of your clothing is drenched in sweat. And you have a better term for it, Dr. Mueller, but I call it just a hormone dump.
Yeah.
And it's only like one night, or at least that's all I ever had. It was like one night and then it was done, but it was like, ooh.
I remember with breastfeeding, I mean, I had it was very relaxing and calming because you are producing a bunch of oxytocin too, which is one benefit of doing that. And that was great. You know, that was calming. That was a great bonding experience, but not for every woman. You know, it really
Everybody's
isn't.
Everybody's different.
So I guess to like sum up like reproductive years, I think that I feel like if I were to say anything, I would say, you know, you're not crazy. And if it isn't related to hormone shifts, then great. But let's, you know, maybe it is. So don't ever dismiss yourself or your concerns. And don't be like, oh, it's just hormones. You know, like if it really is bothering you, let's try to figure it out.
And I say this to clients all the time, and I will say it forever. Talk to your provider. Talk to your provider. That's what they went to school for. Don't look up Dr. Google. Go into your provider and say, this might be, I just did this, you know, with my primary care provider last week. We were trying to figure out why I can't beat this one infection. And I said, let me tell you what I think it is. And you tell me what you think. And I said, I think I'm under so much stress that my body just can't. And he's like, yeah, I think you could be right. Now, he could have also said, you've been smoking too much crack. And I would have said, okay, well then tell me what you think with your medical opinion. But if you can't have that conversation, you might need to look at a different provider, because I always say that's what you went to school for. Make them earn their money. You don't diagnose yourself. I mean, do some research so that you know what's going on, but talk to your provider.
And I think which provider is important too. Like for me personally, if I have an issue like this, like we're talking about, I'm going to go to my OBGYN.
Hands down.
Not that I have anything. I love, love, love my NP, PA.
Yeah.
And they are wonderful. But it's like you choose the provider based, at least me, based on the highest level of education and experience.
Well, I think I have so much respect for family practice doctors. They have to know a little bit about everything. I can't imagine doing their job. And I think most of them would tell you, I don't know a lot about everything. And so that's when they're going to say something like this. A lot of them will say, yeah, go talk to your OB and see what they say.
Right. Well, like just today I was on Facebook and someone hollered out, they said, so-and-so, one of my family members is having hormonally related migraines. Who should I see, you guys? And there was like 20 comments and none of them included an OBGYN. It was all, not that I'm trashing anyone who was mentioned, but it was all chiropractors, neurologists, physiotherapists, nutritionists, like all this other stuff.
All of them good all providers.
Of them good, all mm-hmm. of them good yes. providers. But also I'm like, what am I, chopped liver?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Everyone included in the mix.
My whole specialty was fucking hormones. Like, yeah. Come on.
Yes. I bet I can fix that.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So I feel like, also to sum up, I feel like most people kind of know all the things I just said. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like mm-hmm. most people are like, oh yeah, I could put the dots together on that. I could say if something was crazy or not. If someone was trying to sell me like a bottle of water on the street that was going to help with all of my contraceptive needs, I would know that's crazy. I'm not mm-hmm. going to do that. Like, I feel like most people kind of have everything I just said under their feet.
Yeah.
Or kind of underneath them. But I feel like all that a little bit changes with menopause.
Before we get to menopause, I do want to ask you, with mm-hmm. hormonal headaches, that's mm-hmm. something that we have not addressed. What is the mode of treatment for hormonal headaches?
Yep. Yeah, Brian, what's...
I feel like Brody's calling you out right now.
What's the treatment for that?
So same thing. I mean, the treatment, it's kind of touchy because technically, if you look at the CDC and there's a medical eligibility criteria for certain contraceptives, and people who have certain types of migraines aren't supposed to take hormonal treatment. But conversely, hormonal treatment is the treatment for certain types of migraines.
Oh. Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, I don't know. There's also a vicious cycle there. And so it's kind of user, you got to work with somebody and try to help, because obviously if there's something going on in your luteal phase that is triggering you to be miserable for a week or two and have these debilitating headaches, I can take that luteal phase and make it shorter or less severe or go away. That's mm-hmm. what I can do. But also there's all kinds of headache medicines now that are so good. Mm-hmm. So now there's triptans, which is a special migraine medicine that you can take prophylactically. There's pills or injections you can do for headaches that'll help a lot. I think for migraines, coming from a family of migraine people, yeah. like I have a ton of memories of driving my mom, dad, brother, stepmom to the hospital pretty frequently to get fluids because they'd be puking for 3 days from a migraine. So we yep. know it. And I would say knowing your triggers for migraines specifically, yeah. mm-hmm. if your trigger is only your period, totally let me fix that for you. But most people, it's lack of sleep. It's not eating right, not eating at all. It's other things,
stress.
Dehydration, yeah. stress. So yeah. that's the name of the game with migraines, is find and avoid your triggers.
Yeah.
But I'm a gynecologist, so that don't take that for what's it worth.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
Good question,
though. All right. So let's hit menopause. And I just want to say one more thing. We did do a podcast just on menopause, and we also did one. What is it when you?
But it was just me and you. I mean, yeah.
There was
expert. Yeah.
No. But I'm just saying it's another resource.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And also, after you have the baby and then you have postpartum depression, right? We did one on that as well.
Yes, we did.
Okay, let's hit this.
I mean, talk about how high. We talked about that rocket ship during pregnancy, how high mm-hmm. it is during pregnancy. That all comes crashing down in postpartum. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't have a mental health plan, if you had any predisposition or high risk for mental health before, woof.
Yeah.
So I work really hard to try.
But I think your specialty has come light years in helping men and women prepare.
Totally. Menopause, I feel like we aren't mandated classes on it. So literally, like, it's the reverse of puberty. That's what it is. And so it's all of those things. Every tissue in your whole body is responsive to estrogen in some capacity. Your hair follicles, your skin and your face, your fat and your body that's making you look a certain way or feel a certain way, your absorption of nutrients, your everything, not to mention your cycles or your mood, everything is responsive to estrogen. So now you have this systematic withdrawal of it. Mm-hmm. And it's characterized by wild, wild fluctuations in hormones, you guys, wild. Mm-hmm. So you think a 12-year-old has wild fluctuations. It's nothing compared to menopause, because you have like, okay, so this is embarrassing, but I was like I'm smart in a lot of ways, you guys, but like street smart, I never was. Mm-hmm. So like, as an example, I just like didn't fill my car with gas for a long time. And I was like, it'll probably be fine. Mm-hmm. I ran my car out of gas like several times in high school. I was like, oh, this is what happens. And I found that one time I was stuck in the busiest intersection, Mitchell, South Dakota, and I'd start the car and sometimes it would turn over and I'd get like a little oomph, and I was able to like get some gas out of it. And I was like, I can make it. And then the next time it wouldn't turn over at all. And then I'd mm-hmm. get these like spurts and fits. And I feel like that's what's going on with your ovary. It's like compensated ovarian failure is what's happening.
Oh.
And so your ovary is trying its best. Your brain is like FSH is shooting down these hormones down from your brain saying, ovary, go. And your ovary's like, I'm trying, Captain, you know? And like, so sometimes they can find like an extra like power cell and like, yeah, you know, mm-hmm. and sometimes your brain is actually stimulating your ovary so hard that you will actually double ovulate or have a loop cycle is what it's called. So you'll actually be in the middle of a cycle and you'll ovulate again. Mm-hmm. So you have twice the hormones as normal.
Ugh.
So, I mean, there's crazy things. The other thing that's characteristic about menopause is we talked about that luteal cycle. Well, your follicular phase in menopause goes even shorter, meaning the good part of your cycle, that beginning part that makes you feel good, that's even shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. And so the luteal phase where you're feeling miserable gets longer and longer and longer and longer. Perfect. So when people, so it's like a triple whammy.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you, because we were just talking about this at work the other day. I, hands down, menopause, because I had a radical hysterectomy 4 years ago, menopause has been a cakewalk compared to perimenopause. Mm. And I think it all just made sense.
Mm. Because, why?
Yeah. Hormone-wise. Yeah. Yeah. Hormone-wise. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would get the hot flashes. Mm-hmm. All the things. Mm-hmm. And
but
then,
it also like totally applies when people say, again, they come in and they think hormones, like when they're talking about my department hormones, they think it's like thyroid or like anemia, where mm-hmm. you come in, you get your blood levels checked, your blood level is low and you take medicine for it, right? And you're better. Mm-hmm. Or your thyroid is low, you take hormone and you're better for it. Mine isn't like that. It's supposed mm-hmm. to cycle, and therefore the range of normal is crazy. It's very large on purpose, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll check people's hormones, but if I do it, I do it during a certain time of their cycle.
Right.
Or I won't at all, because it doesn't really matter, honestly. Mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. range is so wide because on purpose, it's supposed to be wide because we're made to like change. So I think a lot of people kind of follow into a trap and they say, okay, I'm going to check your hormones, or like someone will come to me with like a hormone panel. And again, not saying I don't do it. I do it for a specific reason.
Yeah.
But to just get a hormone panel, I just don't think that's the story. That's not where it's at.
Because you're getting like, it's like looking at somebody's day, but only a 15-minute window. That's what I'm hearing you say. And depending mm-hmm. on anything else that could happen in that day, mm-hmm. that 15 minutes while is accurate for that 15 minutes, mm-hmm. might not represent the entire day.
Absolutely. It's like a minute in time. Think back to the people with PMDD, right? Mm-hmm. People with PMDD are severe. We can all agree they're severely suffering. Their levels of hormone are the exact same as the people without it. It doesn't matter. Your sure. symptoms are what matter. Mm-hmm. What matters is that you are being thrown around by your hormones and it's not working for your life. That's what matters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's the manifestation.
Absolutely.
Of mm-hmm. the hormones.
Symptoms are what matter.
Right. And everybody's different. And mm-hmm. I think we're going to say that time and time again. Everybody's different. Mm-hmm. And so that's why working with your provider is so important.
So mm-hmm. like when someone comes to me with menopause stuff, you know, like sometimes they can't even think of a complaint. You know, they can't even think of what's bothering them. They're like, I just don't feel like myself, which I think is perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. But the first thing I'll do when I sit down with people is, number one, sit down with people and be like, what is it that's bothering you?
Right.
Let's try to iron out what exactly it is that's bothering you. And so then I can target what is it that's going to help you. Mm-hmm. Because if I don't know exactly what it is, like what is your goal look like today? And what would be a perfect outcome of this visit? Because oftentimes my perfect outcome is not your perfect outcome, and therefore it's not the perfect outcome. Mm-hmm. So what is it? If you just want to be reassured that you are normal, totally, I can do that. Mm-hmm. If you're scared to death of ovarian cancer because your relatives died of it, I can totally reassure you of that. You know, like tell me what it is that you want and here off we'll go. And I think that the second thing that I always do is educate, you know, like nobody took a class in this. And if it was 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of left floundering, and everything on the internet looks, the best stuff on the internet, the best looking stuff on the internet is made by salespeople. It's people mm-hmm. trying to sell you something, whether it's a program or a book or an exercise or a diet or like a miracle menopause water, Mueller miracle menopause water.
Oh, like, and I have Newt, and that seemed to work. But
I have Newt.
But you know.
That involved a ritual, and right? that's time consuming.
It was, you know, but burning bunny after bunny got really exhausting. But okay, so when it's marketed, uh-huh. how is it marketed?
So... So if it's regulated by the FDA, they'll tell you exactly what they're promising and what, why. So like think about a common men's example, Viagra. So if you see a supplement on the internet for women's, what will it say? Enhanced male potency is what mm-hmm. it will say, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if you buy Viagra, it will say this treats men's impotence. Well, yeah. You can tell I'm not a specialist with men. Mm-hmm. And I think with women, if it's a supplement, like if they're in, anything can be in a supplement, like there's really nobody regulate or you few, have to very be, few people regulate.
You have it. To be so careful with supplements.
So they'll say support hormone health, or they'll say, you know, supports this, or they'll quote research that I say, but they'll only quote the benefits. Mm-hmm. They'll say estrogen has been shown to decrease hot flashes and has good outcomes for people, but they won't say anything else. And then that's your cue to be like, huh.
Yeah.
If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
So they're not giving the possible, because every medication has side effects, right?
Everyone.
So what you're saying is supplements are not saying these are the bad things that can happen, which comes with most FDA approved medications.
Yeah, they
don't
have
They are not required to. They're also not required to prove that it works. Mm-hmm. They're also not required to say what's in it. They're also not required in any way to show like studies that they did on anyone to say, this is who we tested it on. This is how they responded. So, I mean, that's all just kind of how our regulatory system
and
is set up.
That's anything that is not FDA regulated. And I will go on the record as saying, I don't think the FDA is the end all be all. There are lots of problems within the FDA. However, if you get 25 milligrams of turmeric, for example, I love turmeric, by the way. They aren't required to make sure there's 25 milligrams. They are not. It could be 250. It could be zero. Nobody's regulating, nobody's testing it. You just have to hope that the company you're buying it from is reputable.
Mm-hmm. And there are, there's two organizations that I know of, and I can put them in the show notes, but if it has it on the label that they have the, oh gosh.
Is it CPG?
No, okay. It could be. I don't know. I'll put it in the show notes in it because I totally forgot. But basically all they're guaranteeing is that it is what it says it is. Okay. So that's the best you can hope for, is that they have the actual milligrams in it and it is what it says it is. That's kind of the best you can do.
But they haven't had to do an actual clinical study that has all of the protocols that with the hoops that you have to jump through if you mm-hmm. want to get FDA approval. Mm-hmm. Like they could take three people off the street and say, take this. Do your joints feel better? Oh, great. This is our new joint formula. Mm-hmm.
And this is the part in the story where, like, I really wish that Brody and I had sold, like, Mueller Miracle Menopause Water mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. I don't have to prove anything about it. And
it's not too late. Not too late.
Coming at the market.
Yeah. We'll put the THC in it and everyone will love it. but yeah, that's kind of my thing about that. Now, Brian, I mean, if you really were like, Brian, you're telling me you never prescribe something off label, meaning not FDA approved for that indication. Oh, hell no. I do every day. But the difference is that the National American Menopause Society has studied it. They have studied it in the context that I'm doing it in the dose that I'm doing it in for the indication that I'm doing it in. So I'm not making it up. If I'm not doing it because it's not FDA approved, I still have ACOG, which is the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, or NAMS, or some other organization that's telling me how to do that.
Right.
And an organization that isn't profiting off this. And to me, that's a big point. Thing. Like, I don't care what you're researching. I want you to take a look at where your research is coming from. Mm-hmm. I don't care what the topic is. Mm-hmm. And if the research is done by somebody who's going to profit off the results, mm-hmm. chances are it's probably skewed. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so if you do, what is it? Mueller Miracle Menopause Water. And the Mueller Foundation found that it is great for menopause.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So you should buy it. That's a little suspect.
If I owned Prozac, all of a sudden, everyone would need Prozac because it would be really hard for me to separate me. And you, I think that's what I have to offer, honestly, as a doctor, kind of at all in a practice like I am, is I don't get paid more no matter what I prescribe to whoever. And more importantly, Sanford doesn't get paid anymore. Mm-hmm. So if I prescribe testosterone, if I prescribe estrogen, if I prescribe any of that, it doesn't matter. I pick what's right for you. The other thing is I'm able to give you the gamut, the entire cornucopia of your options in an unbiased way. You don't have one option. You have 10 options, if not more. So in listening to your specific story of what your goals are and what your personal medical history are and what you prefer, I can give you an unbiased like look at everything, and I can get you something that's probably cheap, cheaper than vitamins, minerals, or off-label, bioidentical, whatever. I can give you something that's cheap. I can give you something that's FDA approved probably and covered by your insurance. And people are like, what? Again, look at me.
And there again, that's why I think it's so important to talk to your medical provider. Like when it came time to look at hormones, I had a talk with my OBGYN about it. What would work best for me, if anything? And that way I was getting her opinion and there was nothing in it for her. Mm-hmm. Period.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. And I have no doubt that what she recommended for me might be different than what she would recommend for Fran and different from what she'd recommend for you. Mm-hmm. I, like I said, radical hysterectomy 4 years ago, I've never taken a hormone. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad for that. And the door's open between the two of us. If anything changes, then I come back to her and we have a conversation about what's going on.
Totally. Right. Absolutely. And just like some women don't need anything because they don't have bad PMS. So lots of women get through. Menopause is like childbirth. Like it can be annoying and it can hurt. Or it can be fine, but you have options. You know, you can choose to get an epidural or you cannot. Both are perfectly fine. That's your choice. So yeah, my job as a doctor in general is to just kind of offer you, I've done these degrees. I don't want to say how old I am, but I've been studying this for my whole life. Mm-hmm. So use me. I mean, use what I have to offer, you know, like I know a lot of stuff and I think that I'm a little bit more approachable and easier to kind of get to the heart of it than Google. Mm-hmm. Yes. And even myself, like even looking through the stuff that if you Google menopause going into it, the most beautiful, beautiful websites are the people who are selling something. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to sort that information out on yourself. And I think as women, we deserve options. We deserve research. We deserve all like someone who's going to give it all to us and let us choose ourselves because we're intelligent people. Mm-hmm. But you deserve a provider who's not just selling you one product that they like a lot and they get a secondary gain from. You deserve more than that.
Well, and I'd like to think we're not guinea pigs. And when we were talking about puberty, I was sitting here thinking like with any of my children when they were going through puberty and all of the pitfalls that come with puberty, right? Mm-hmm. If somebody would have said, here, give your child this medicine that's not FDA regulated and it's going to take care of all of the nasty puberty side effects, would I do it? Of course not. I would never do that to my kid. But then why do we do it to ourselves as adults? Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just my thought. Maybe I'm just crazy.
Yeah. No, I don't think you're crazy.
I think the research and the conversation is so important.
I mean, it's always worth the conversation of like, what is it worth to you? Is the juice worth the squeeze? You know, and if it's not,
I'm stealing that one. That's amazing.
Bonnie's like, if it's testicular juice, then yes, it is.
Oh, way to bring it back.
But I think we're more than just, you know, we deserve more than just being sold a product. I really do believe that. And I think that if men deserve it, we deserve it. That's all.
Agreed. Preach, woman.
So what are treatments of choice then that are FDA approved that you would consider for women with menopause symptoms?
Yep. So all kinds of things. So you can treat the symptoms. So so let's talk about like vasomotor symptoms. So hot flashes, night sweats. If you can't sleep at night because you're hot flashing or whatever, then there's all kinds of, the first line treatment for that is something with estrogen in it. Estrogen is what your withdrawing from. So that's if you replace it in a smart and efficacious way, mm-hmm. you will be cured from your problem. Likewise, there's also a couple SSRIs, SNRIs that work for hot flashes. And then there's some other things too. There's bioidentical things, but bioidentical is more of a marketing term. It doesn't really mean anything. Bioidentical to a doctor or to a researcher or to the FDA means the exact replica of the hormone that would be produced by the human ovary during the reproductive years. That's what bioidentical means. So that means estradiol, which is what we prescribe routinely, and mm-hmm. Prometrium, those are bioidentical. And there, if you buy a bioidentical thing, which is like the buzzword to mean like maybe it's safer, it was produced in a lab, just the same as whatever I would prescribe. It's not like it's any more natural or healthy or better for you.
Mm-hmm. So here's the assumption I have in my head, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong. I'm assuming if I come to you and my estrogen is low for whatever reason, based on symptoms or labs or whatever you decide to do, do you prescribe then something like estradiol in slow increments, almost like a thyroid medicine? Like when my thyroid went out of whack, I didn't get 200 micrograms of levothyroxine off the bat. Mm-hmm. It started out really small and then gradually increased.
Totally. And that is also true. I mean, the smallest possible dose that solves your problem is always good.
Because I'm guessing too much could also have adverse effects.
Totally. And it depends on your age. Like say you go to a premature ovarian insufficiency at 35, you need a large amount of estrogen because that's what you would be used to. Say you're 60 and you just need a little bit, then great, do a little bit. Now that doesn't apply to vaginal estrogen, actually. Vaginal estrogen is in its own category and it's not systemically absorbed. And so you can do we do vaginal estrogen for about everybody. There's never anyone who's ever died from vaginal estrogen. I know I just said if it sounds too good to be true, it's not, but this is like the one exception. Mm-hmm. So for any sort of dyspareunia, meaning pain with intercourse, dryness, discomfort, whatever, it just works so well. And so, you can do that until you're 100.
So what if I'm 60?
Gosh, you're so hot.
So what if I'm 60 and my estrogen's a little low and you overprescribed, not you, but like, let's say somebody overprescribes estradiol instead of, I'm making shit up because I've never done this, but let's say instead of 5 milligrams of estradiol, I take 50.
So estrogen will make you feel great. And estrogen is what our body needs. I think the time when people feel where you're going to get negative effects is, I mean, if you have too much estrogen, your risk is always blood clots because estrogen is hypercoagulant in high doses in different groups. Certain people are more sensitive to it, et cetera. So that would be a bad reason for it. Or if you have an estrogen receptor positive cancer, that's not good. So those are the two contraindications or bad things that can happen from estrogen. But if you think about progesterone or testosterone, testosterone is a little bit different. Testosterone can be prescribed to women all the time. It's just not in the same doses of men. So ACOG and the National American Menopause Society and ISWISH, which is the sexual health premier organization, you can definitely prescribe testosterone to people, but be responsible for about it and run people in the premenopausal female range. If you run people higher than the premenopausal female range for testosterone, you're going to get all the effects of someone transitioning from a female to a male eventually. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why athletes are not allowed to take testosterone exogenously. It's because they perform better. They have more energy. They have more muscle. Yeah. And that's not by accident. That's because they're taking exogenous steroids.
We were talking about this before you got here. So I did sublingual testosterone a few years ago because my testosterone is very low through my doctor. And I can't remember if we were at 2 milligrams or 4 milligrams. I don't know if any of that sounds familiar because it's been a while. But anyway, it was having no effect on my testosterone. I mean, it's just very minimal. Mm-hmm. And my doctor at that time said, I'm not comfortable giving you any more than this because then we're running a cancer risk.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so, you know, she's like, you and Jim have to talk about it. And I'm like, so do you want a horny wife that dies in 3 years or?
And then to be clear, as far as like a sex drive, that's also a thing, right?
Yeah.
But sex drive has come a long way too. Testosterone isn't always the answer for many people, but there's also FDA approved medicines for sex drive.
Yeah.
Literally. And so, you know, talk to me about that. If you don't want to, I mean, have the, sure, if your testosterone is the same as Brody's or Brody when he was 15.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to want to have sex all the time. You're going to have a lady boner constant. Sorry. We got to cut that out. We can't put that.
No, we can totally put that in. But there's side effects to that.
You are going to have all the, so men die sooner than women. That's a known fact. And it's because their engine is running hot with testosterone their whole life. So they have a higher all cause mortality rate. So therefore, if you're going to run yourself that way, you're going to have the increased risk of all the things that kill men earlier than women.
Driving like you stole it, baby.
Oh my God.
So again,
I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that was the reason men died. I thought it was because women tortured men on a regular basis.
That's what men say.
See, this is why I'm so happy we learn all of this.
So again, testosterone's not bad, but you have to be judicious with it.
And what I'm mad about, what I really am mad about is because, you know, FDA has approved all kinds of treatments for men for testosterone, right?
Yeah.
Because they give a shit. And so like there is a pellet approved for men for low testosterone. There is no such pellet for women at all. Because
where do I put it?
Oh, she'll help you with that.
I'm not a man doctor.
No, she don't know shit. When I
about
have
men,
a cold,
about men, yeah.
I say, I'm like, oh, you feel like you're dying. Bad. She goes, oh, I'm sorry. Do you have a vagina? Then I don't really.
I don't
care.
Know. You're right.
I don't know what to do.
I don't mess with you. Yeah. I think that there, if the pellet companies or if the testosterone, whatever companies gave a shit about women, they would do a research study, prove that it works and do it.
Right.
I mean, if you
and
can
cover it by insurance.
Totally. If you can show me that it works and that it's beneficial, more beneficial than what we have out there, which is FDA approved, then do it. But it's not, and they can't. Mm.
So bottom line, talk to your provider.
Yeah.
Have that conversation.
Yeah. I think that you'd be surprised at how much people can offer or how much doctors can offer you. You need not, kill yourself doing research or running around. I think that there's a lot more options than what our mothers had.
And as Fran said earlier, I want to just echo what you said, and that is go see a specialist. You know, if what you're dealing with is specialized, then go see a specialist. I don't think too many specialists are going to be like, yeah, you're wasting my time. You need to get out of here.
Well, I mean, here's the way I feel. I think having you as a resource is such an incredible, wonderful opportunity because it's like if I have a daughter that's having hormonal headaches or acne, any of these issues, it's like, and oh, people are going to kill me, but I have always preferred female doctors. And don't get me wrong, I have just simply because I feel more comfortable talking to women about things that I consider more private. Many of my friends and clients are totally fine discussing the same things with dudes. I'm not. So mm-hmm. I love yes. the fact that I have you as an option as a specialist. Yep. And it's like, what a fantastic resource.
I agree completely. Mm-hmm. I would also, though, I want to give a shout out to a lot of the medical providers we have right now that totally. Are men
yes.
who are, you know, like our primary care is a male. And he is so comfortable talking about all of this. Mm-hmm. He just makes it a very welcoming environment. And there's no question that's too personal.
Right.
But you do have to go with what your preference is.
Right.
That's what's most important. Mm-hmm.
And I think that goes for vibe too. You know, yeah. like if I'm not, you know, if you don't like me, please, my feelings will not be hurt. Find somebody else. I think there's different doctors for different people, and no one should ever have hard feelings about finding someone that you jive with. That's right. important to me.
Same thing with therapy.
Yeah. yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Totally. Oh, Dr. Brian Mueller, thank you so much yeah, for being
pleasure.
Here.
My pleasure. It's been so wonderful. I did want to throw out some resources available. Yes. So we talked about internet, and I'm never upset if people do Google or they want to yeah. like do their own research, and I will totally address that. It's more helpful to me if people say like, hey, I've been reading about this. Can you address it? Yeah. Like, don't beat around the bush. Just tell me and I'll totally address it. But I do recommend, so the National American Menopause Society. So they are the organization that I view as, and most people who went to school for gynecology view as the world experts on menopause. And that is, they have a tab on the top that says for patients, and it has tons of information about menopause.
I'm going to check it out.
Yeah. yeah. Unbiased. And interestingly, just this month, they put out a bulletin about bioidentical hormones and pellets. So if you ever have questions about it, I mean, it kind of like in the end doesn't matter what I think. I'm a rural gynecologist in South Dakota. What yeah. it does matter is that I'm following the guidelines put forth that are the most up-to-date, most, you know, reliable sources of information. And then the second thing is the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology. Mm-hmm. They also have a for patients tab. And if you have a daughter who's going through puberty, if you have anyone who's thinking about sexual health, anything like that, gosh, so many resources that I wish I would have had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that I appreciate wonderful. Those resources.
Thanks
Thank you.
For joining us today.
Thank we you. Appreciate yeah. you.
This was so fun. Thanks for having me, you guys. I really appreciate it.
We just love your knowledge it. So much. And you deliver it in such an understandable and relatable way. So you are welcome anytime.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, you guys, we are the Shrinks.
And that's a wrap.